to turn to the book of Mark, chapter 2, to read the same passage that we read this morning. Mark chapter 2, read verses 1 through 12. And again he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them, no, not so much as about the door. And he preached the word unto them. And they come unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was borne or carried afore. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was. And when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there and reasoning in their hearts, Why doth this man thus speak blasphemy, speaking of Christ? Who can forgive sins but God only? And immediately, when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise and take up thy bed and walk? But that you may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. That's a wonderful statement. Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. He saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise, take up thy bed, and go thy way into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went before them all, insomuch that they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, We never saw it in this fashion. Again, this passage, as we saw this morning, opens with Jesus returning to Capernaum. We see that by the word, the second word in verse 1, that word again. And Capernaum, as we saw this morning, is the place where Jesus began his public ministry. Matthew chapter 4, verses 13 through 17 reveal that fact to us. And it was a place where he worked more miracles than any other place. We saw this morning that from Mark chapter 1, we learn that previously in Capernaum, Jesus had taught in the synagogue that was there, and the people were astonished at his doctrine. They were astonished at his teaching. And in that same synagogue, he manifested his power over the forces of hell by casting out a demon from a man. As a result of this, his fame spread abroad throughout all the region. We read in Mark 1, verse 28, Simon and Andrew had a house in Capernaum, and Jesus entered that house with James and John, and there he healed Simon's mother-in-law in that house. And news again was spreading that Jesus was back in the Capernaum, and news spread that Jesus was in the house of Simon, and a great multitude had gathered at the house, and they brought with them the diseased and the possessed, and we see that Jesus healed them. We see that in Mark chapter 1, verses 32 through 34. That took place in the evening, according to verse 32, and then in the morning, verse 35, and in the morning, Jesus arose, and he would go out to a solitary place with the purpose of praying. And we see there were some who followed him, and their words to him were, All men seek for thee. And we see what transpired there in verses 35 through verse 37. And then in verse 38, And he, Jesus, said unto them, Let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also. And for therefore came I forth, that is, to preach. And then we see, and again he entered into Capernaum after some days. So the Lord was in Capernaum. He left Capernaum. He was gone for some days, and now he has returned. And news spread very quickly that he was in the house there in chapter 2 and verse 1. As a result, we see in verse 2, the people came to the house, and there was a great multitude in the house. There was a great multitude around the house. And then we see how four individuals carried a certain paralytic to that house where Jesus was. We read that in chapter 2 and verse 3. And what follows is a description of how Jesus would heal this particular man. So what we have here in our text is the account of the healing of this paralytic. And as we saw this morning, the Holy Spirit also moved Matthew and Luke to record this miraculous event, and no doubt he did so for our learning. He did so for our encouragement, and there are many, many, many things that the child of God can glean from this event that we read of, and there's many places where the emphasis can be laid. There are many applications that can be made, but in tonight's message, we want to center our thoughts upon these four individuals who carried this paralytic to the place where Jesus was. And the subject tonight is the paralytic and his four friends. Before we look at the paralytic and his friends, we want to, and we could lay the stress here, but we're not going to. We could certainly preach a message on this, but that's not our purpose tonight. But before we look at this paralytic, we do want to draw your attention to some others who are mentioned. And as we consider these others, other than the four and the paralytic, ask yourselves, as we consider these and as we consider the four friends and the man with the palsy, ask yourself, with whom do I identify? With whom do I identify? There were some others who were present at this house. Mark writes in verse 2, many were gathered together. Many had come to that house. They all came because they heard that Jesus was there. But they did not all come for the same reasons. They had different spirits about them. They had different reasons for being there. Luke, if we go over to Luke chapter 5, we see that there were some Pharisees and scribes, and Luke opens his account with mention of these individuals in Luke 5 verse 17. It came to pass on a certain day, as he was teaching, that there were Pharisees and doctors of the law. And what were they doing? They were sitting by. Mark also makes mention of these in verse 6 of his account back in Mark chapter 2. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there and reasoning in their hearts. So Luke refers to them as the doctors of the law. And the doctors of the law that Luke mentions are the same as the scribes that Mark mentions, just different ways of describing the same people. The scribes were the theologians of the Pharisaical system. They were not the theologians of the Bible, though they studied scriptures. They were the theologians of the Pharisaical system. And these scribes, their duty was to copy scripture. And without a doubt, they were very, very familiar with Scripture, and they were very familiar with biblical text. And in their day, they were considered to be biblical scholars. But by the time of Christ, their interpretation, that is, the interpretation of the scribes, the interpretation of the law, had become their interpretation had become more important than what the law said. In other words, their opinion was elevated above what God said. It wasn't necessarily what did God say, it's what did the scribes say. How do the scribes interpret what God said? Then you have the Pharisees. And all through the scriptures, we see the scribes and Pharisees are mentioned together. They're not the same people. They belong to the same group. But the Pharisees basically were the enforcers of the opinions of the scribes. The scribes would give their opinions, and the Pharisees would enforce their opinions. These scribes and Pharisees made up the religious system of Christ's day. In reading through the Gospels, it's obvious that Jesus Christ abhorred. He abhorred this religious system. It was a works-based system in which the outward appearance was stressed to the neglect of the inward. It was strictly a system of hypocrisy. And Christ's abhorrence of and the nature of the system is seen very clearly in Matthew chapter 23. We're not going to turn there to save time, but we would encourage you to read there. When Jesus seven times said, "Woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites." Seven times. And then, following that statement, "Woe unto you," was a reason for the pronouncement of woe, which describes the nature of the whole system. These scribes and Pharisees, as you follow them through the scriptures, they possessed a critical spirit. They were always critical. They possessed a critical spirit, and they were always trying to find fault with Christ. They were always trying to find fault with what Christ preached. Wherever Christ was preaching, the scribes and Pharisees would usually show up. Not to learn something, but to be critical. To try and, again, discredit the teaching and preaching of Christ. They were always trying to entrap Jesus Christ. They would ask him what would appear to be innocent questions, but they did so for the purpose of entrapping him. Whenever they were present, they always put a damper upon spirituality. Now in our text, Jesus is preaching. Something great had transpired in verse 4, we see that they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, "Son, thy sins be forgiven thee." Something wonderful had just happened. Verse 6, but. There it is. But. There were certain of the scribes. Something wonderful has happened. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there. They're still around. The whole Pharisaical system is still around. And they like to sit and hear preaching. Not for the right motives. But there they were sitting. Were they rejoicing about the miracle? No. They were reasoning in their hearts. They had hate toward the messenger, in this case, Jesus Christ. And what they were reasoning in their hearts was, this man is guilty of blasphemy because only God can forgive sins. What should have caused them great joy, there they were sitting, put a damper on everything. It's not our purpose to preach on this group, but we want to mention them. There was also the multitude. Most that made up that multitude were there to see the miraculous. They weren't there necessarily for the reasons the scribes were there, to find fault, but they were there to see something spectacular. They were curious. They were spiritually passive. They were spiritually indifferent. And they were uncommitted. Jesus makes reference to the people of Capernaum. Notice in Luke chapter 10, verses 13 through 15. Woe unto you, Chorazin! Woe unto thee, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works had been done in Tyre and Sidon, which have been done in you, they had a great while ago repented, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. But it shall be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon at the judgment than for you. And thou, Capernaum, which art exalted to heaven, shall be thrust down to hell. He that heareth, well, we'll stop there. But we see they were indifferent. The people as a whole of Capernaum were, they were interested in seeing miracles. They were not interested in hearing the message of Christ. They were interested in the spectacular. But the truth is, they rejected the Lord who did the spectacular. They heard Jesus preach over and over and over again. They saw Jesus do wonderful things. There was no lasting impression. It never made a lasting impression upon them. Even when they went from this scene and it says that they glorified God, it didn't last. But notice these people who were gathered, they were really an obstruction. They were in the way. Notice Mark 2, verse 4. The four individuals carry this man of the palsy. And in verse 4, and when they could not come nigh unto him, notice it does not say when they could not come into the house, though that be true. But that wasn't their desire just to get in the house. Their desire was to be nigh unto him. That was their desire. And when they could not come nigh unto him, why couldn't they come nigh unto him? For the press. The people were in the way. Notice in Luke chapter 5, verse 19. And when they could not find by what way they might bring him in, because of the multitude. So these people were an obstruction. They got in the way. People have a tendency to do that. We all, if we're not careful, will get in the way of the Lord's work. That is one thing we ought to always pray, is, Lord, get me out of the way. But these people were an obstruction. The end result of all of this is that the paralytic was healed. His sins were forgiven. He was made a new man. He went home a new man. He went home blessed. And that leads us to where we want to put the emphasis. What transpired to bring that about? What led to that? So we want to consider seven things about these four, and the paralytic is considered in some of them as well. Well, we read in Mark chapter 2 in verse 3 that there was one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. So we have five individuals. And did not all five of them experience Christ that day? They certainly did. All five of them. The paralytic more than the others. But all five went away blessed. What they experienced that day had a lasting impact upon them. Now, we never read of these individuals again, but I don't believe these four ever got over what happened that day. We want to notice again some specific characteristics about these individuals, because again, there's some valuable instruction concerning how we are to approach where Christ is. Because that's what this is all about. They are going to approach. They're going to get to the place where Christ is. We want to notice seven things. First of all, there was a recognized and felt need. The man with the palsy, you didn't have to tell him that he couldn't walk. No one had to come up to him and say, "Hey, buddy, do you realize you can't walk?" He knew he couldn't walk. He knew that. He dealt with that every day for however long he was paralyzed. He knew that he was a paralytic. These four men who carried him, they knew that he was a paralytic. There was no question in anybody's mind, this man is paralyzed. This man cannot walk. And both the paralytic and the four knew that this man's needs were beyond themselves. What this man needed was beyond human ability. Not one of those four men believed that they were able to heal that man of his paralysis. And certainly, the paralytic did not think that he could just make himself better. Now, in that house, we have the scribes and Pharisees. And they were needy. But you see, they were self-righteous. And they felt no spiritual need. But these five individuals, they are needy, but they felt the need. Those who were gathered in the house and around the house, they too were very needy. But most felt no sense of need. They were there out of curiosity. Basically, they were just there. They were just there. That happens every Sunday, by the way. There are people that are just there. Nothing happens. They're just there. That was how it was with this multitude. But this man that was paralyzed, he had a need, and he felt his need. These four men who carried him, they realized that the paralytic had a need. And in some sense, they felt his need. Secondly, there was a desire and a longing. This man with the palsy certainly desired to be rid of his paralysis. Certainly he desired to walk. Certainly he desired to have his life restored. And these four individuals, whoever they were, they could have been relatives, they could have been neighbors, who knows? Doesn't really matter. But these four individuals obviously cared about this man. And they too had a desire to see this man made whole. They had a desire to see this man made whole. So there was a need, there was a realization of need, there was a desire and longing concerning the need. Thirdly, there was a knowledge of where Christ was. These five individuals, I include the paralytic, no doubt had heard of how Christ had in Capernaum healed many that were sick of divers diseases and cast out many devils. They heard this when it was noised that he was in the house. Did they not know that Jesus Christ, who had healed so many, he's in a certain place? They knew where Christ was. Now, there's a need. There is the feeling of the need. There is a desire to have the need fulfilled. There is knowledge that Jesus Christ is at a certain house. Fourthly, there was faith in the person of Christ. Luke, in his account, in Luke 5:17, says concerning Christ being in that certain house, and the power of the Lord was present to heal them. These five believed that. Now, I realize that most times when this is preached, it's preached the faith of the four. But I'm sorry, I believe the paralytic also believed. He also believed. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record that before Jesus spoke to the paralytic, before he said, "Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee," before he said that, he recognized their faith. He saw their faith. Notice Matthew 9, verse 2. Matthew 9, verse 2. And behold, they brought to him a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy. Jesus, seeing their faith. Whose faith? Well, I believe it was the faith of the four who carried him up that roof. But I believe it was also the faith of the paralytic. He saw their faith. And then he spoke. Mark chapter 2, verse 4, we see they let down, in the latter part of the verse, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay, and when Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, "Thy sins be forgiven thee." We see the same thing in Luke chapter 5. Verses 19 and verse 20. So I believe that when it says that Jesus saw their faith, he meant he was referring to all five. The faith of the four, and there was faith of the paralytic. These five believed. They were convinced that Jesus had the power, the ability, the know-how to cure the paralysis and to mend this man's physical body. They believed that he was able. That brings us to our fifth point. So, up till now, we've got, they were conscious of need. There was a desire and longing concerning that need. There was an awareness or a knowledge of where Jesus was. And fourthly, they believed that Jesus was able. Now what do they do? Fifthly, they move in the direction. They began to move in the direction of where Christ is. I don't believe that these four took this paralytic against his will. I believe he was willing to go, because I believe he had heard and he desired to be cured. So I believe they were in unison as they are moving in the direction of Jesus Christ. I see the paralytic lying on this pallet. He's being carried by four men, one man on each corner, no doubt. And these four are walking in unison. Can you imagine if they weren't? Can you imagine what would have happened if these four were not in unity? They were all headed in the same direction. Why? Because they all realized the same need. They all had the same desire. They all realized where Christ was, and they all believed that he was able. So in unity, they're heading in the direction of where Christ is. And we need to always be examining our hearts and our lives. Are we heading in the direction of where Christ is? Or are we moving in a different direction? So they're headed toward Christ. And I'm sure as they're on their way to that place where Jesus is, I'm sure there were some obstacles, perhaps some hills, perhaps some rocks, perhaps some ditches. But I'm sure that along the way there were some obstacles. I'm sure that along the way there were some rough patches. There were some difficult spots along the way. Perhaps they got tired and had to stop and rest. But they were all conscious of a need. And they were all had the same longing in their hearts. And they all knew where Jesus was. And they all believed that Christ was able. So they persevered, heading toward Christ. I don't know what they had to go through before they got to the house. But I assure you that the devil was at work, and there were problems, and there were obstructions. Sixthly, they arrive at the house, and they overcome that which was between them and the Lord. They did so in a twofold way. We see when they arrived at the place where Jesus was, they found that there were people between them and Christ. Verse 4 of our text, and when they could not come nigh unto him, that's their desire, to come nigh unto Jesus, there was something in the way. What was in the way? People. People were in the way. Now these five, they knew that Jesus, the one whom they needed, was in the house. But when they arrive, there's all these people between them and the Lord. Luke 5, verse 19, they could not find by what way they might bring him in again because of the multitude. The people were in the way. The people were an obstacle. Now the paralytic, at this moment, he didn't. But he could have said, friends, just forget about it. It's not worth it. All these people in here, it's not worth it. Just take me back home. The four could have began to talk amongst themselves. Again, keep in mind, they're trying to find a way. They're, excuse me, nobody's moving. Excuse me, we've got an emergency here. This man needs Jesus. Nobody's moving. Nobody budges. They're in the way. They're in the way. And one of the four, again, could have said, he didn't, or all four of them, well, let's just go home. We'll come back another time. They could have brought the paralytic back to his house. And they could have taken the attitude, that is, the four could have taken the attitude, well, we tried. I'm not going to go back. Even if Jesus is there tomorrow, I'm not going back. I said, excuse me to that lady in front of me. I said, excuse me to the gentleman beside me. And they didn't move. I'm not going back because of those people. Happens all the time. Happens all the time. The paralytic, had they brought him back home, could have taken the attitude, oh, here I lie on my bed, unable to walk, unable to live the life that I would like. Oh, I wanted to, but those people, they got in the way. And that's why I'm crippled. That's why I can't walk. That's why I live this way. Those people. They could have taken this attitude. You know, through the years, I've had many say to me, the reason I'm not coming is because brother so-and-so's there, sister so-and-so's there. And they'll go on and explain. Usually I'll stop them. Don't want to hear it. And say, it's because of them that I'm not there. You're talking to the wrong person if you want sympathy. Because I might even agree with you, though I would not let you know that. I might even agree with you, yes, brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so, they're terrible. But that's no reason, that's not the reason you're not there. So don't go there. I'm not the person you want to talk to about that. You might as well just go talk to someone else about it. Those people. Oh, Brother Dan, you know I'd be there, but there's some people there that I don't like. And they're the problem. But these four individuals, they were not going to let the people prevent them from getting near to Jesus Christ. I decided a long time ago that I, to the best of my ability and by the grace of God, I am not going to let people get in the way of my relationship with Jesus Christ. And that was the attitude that these four took. They felt a need. They had a desire to have that need met. They knew that Jesus was in the house. They believed that he was able to meet the need and satisfy the longing of their heart. They were desperate for an encounter with the almighty power of God. And they knew that if we're going to enter the presence of Jesus, if we're going to enter into his presence and be blessed, we've got to get past these people. And that's true today too. If you're going to be blessed, if you're going to get into the presence of God where you can be blessed, I'm here to tell you, you're going to have to get by some people. And that's what they did. They didn't quit. As we saw this morning, they rose above the crowd. They went up upon the housetop. Luke chapter 5, verse 19. You see, the people stood between them and Christ. And if you think that there are people standing between you and your personal relationship with Christ, they're not. You let them. But you can get above them. You can get above them. People aren't the problem. The problem is we don't find a way to rise above them. So they get up on the roof. There was something else in the way. There was something else between them and Christ. Up on that roof, they cannot see Jesus. Again, as we said this morning, perhaps they can hear the muffled sound of his voice. They've gotten past the people, but there's still something between them and him. The roof's in the way. The clay is in the way. Mark chapter 2 and verse 4 says, they uncovered the roof where he was when they had broken it up. They got the clay out of the way. They got the dirt out of the way. They got the debris out of the way. That's what you got to do if you're going to get into the presence of Jesus to be blessed. It's very similar to Genesis chapter 26. Again, we'll not go there to save time. But Isaac and his servants were very desirous of water. And they knew where a well was. When they got to the well, Genesis 26 verse 15, it says the Philistines had stopped or plugged them, the wells, with earth. Earth plugs a lot of things. You know, in that well, the water was still there. The problem was earth was in the way. And if Isaac and his servants were going to experience and enjoy the water of those wells, you know what they had to do? They had to remove the earth. They had to remove the dirt. And that's what they did. And that's what these four individuals did as well. They got up on that roof and they got the clay out of the way. So they've gotten beyond the people. They've now gotten all the clay out of the way, and they were able to let down the bed before Jesus. In other words, now there was nothing between them and him. That is where we've got to be. Nothing between us and him. We've got to get into his presence. That which stands in the way must be overcome. So seventhly, they entered into the very presence of Jesus. Luke 5 verse 19, and led him down through the tiling with his couch in the midst before Jesus. In the midst before Jesus. And it was there that his sins were forgiven. His sins weren't forgiven outside of that house, all the people in the way. Sins weren't forgiven when he got up on the rooftop. No, the clay had to be removed. His sins were forgiven when he got into the presence of Jesus Christ. It was there, in the presence of Christ, that he was given a new life. It was there in the presence of Christ that he was enabled to rise, to sit up, to stand up, to bend down and pick up his bed and to walk. All of that transpired in the presence of Christ. You see, our problem today is we want all that to transpire without getting all the junk out of the way. We want all that to transpire when we can't get beyond the people
when we can't get beyond the dirt.
It's like in Nehemiah's day. Nehemiah, there's much rubbish we can't build. It's true. Those things have to be out of the way. It was there in the presence of Jesus that this man had a song of praise that filled his heart. That's where he got it. He didn't get that song of praise standing outside saying, "Oh, I wish these people would get out of the way. I wish that woman in front of me would just move. They're keeping me from the blessings of God." That's not where he got the song put in his heart. They didn't get up on the roof and then see, "Oh, this is going to take some work. We're tired. We've walked the ways. Let's just forget it. He wouldn't have gone away with a song in his heart. The clay had to be removed. They had to enter into the presence of Jesus Christ. And it was from there that he went home a new man. So in closing, with a recognized and felt need, with a desire to have that need met, with a knowledge where Christ was, and a faith that believed that there was power in Christ to heal, they headed in the direction of Christ. You know why people don't head in the direction of Christ? I'm talking about saved people. Because they do not recognize and feel a need. Because they do not have the desire for that need to be met. Because they do not know where Christ is. Or perhaps because they do not believe that he is able. But when all four of those things are in place, guess what? You're going to move in the direction of Christ. And when you're moving in the direction of Christ, you're going the right way. They so longed for Christ. They wanted to lay their need before Christ. Their longing and desire was so strong they would not be deterred. They did not allow anybody to keep them from enjoying the blessings of Christ. They did not allow the clay, the earth, to prevent them from experiencing Jesus Christ. So I ask you here and now, how far are you willing to go to be near to Jesus? Just how far are you willing to go? What pains are you willing to undertake to experience Christ? Are you willing to rise above the people that are in the way? Because let me assure you of this, there will always be somebody in the way. Always. Are you willing to rise above the people that are in the way? People will say, "Oh, if it wasn't for brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so, I'd be much better. Brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so passes away. They move out of state. Guess what? That person still doesn't come back. Because now they got somebody else in their mind." There's always somebody. That's not the problem. Are we willing to do some digging to get the clay out of the way? What are we willing to do that there be nothing in the way? And you know what? When that paralytic was lowered down before Jesus, in the presence of Jesus, he saw him. Couldn't see him outside. Couldn't see him up on the roof. But he saw him now. He heard him. He heard him loud and clear. What are you willing? How far are you willing to go be in the presence of Christ. Really, how easily deterred we are answers those questions. That answers those questions. So perhaps we need to just ask, what does it take to deter us? How much does it take to deter us from drawing near to Christ? However long they walked, paralytic, however long he was carried, however long they tried to make their way through that multitude, and I'm sure it became very, very frustrating. And however difficult it was to carry that makeshift pallet up the stairs, up under the roof, and all the jostling and the bumps that caused pain to this paralytic, whatever they had to go through, I'm telling you, when that bed was lowered down through the roof and it was before Jesus Christ and Jesus said, "Son, thy sins are forgiven," it was worth it all. It was worth everything. They did not regret the time it took, the expense it took. They did not regret the effort it took. It was worth it all. And it's worth it all. Whatever it is, it's worth it all to be in the presence of Jesus Christ. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.